I'm my co-host. I can't believe it. On a day like this, I can't believe it.
I rejected my invite because I didn't want to have that conversation.
On the important days, we have to make sure the co-hosts are people that are responsible and know what they're talking about. So, Ryan, good to have you.
So, what are you doing here, bro?
What am I doing? Is that what you said?
He wants to put me up there.
And to be honest, it's a joke, but it's also true. I barely knew about the hack. But you and Fred were kind of disagreeing on how serious this is, Ryan. Maybe give us an overview.
Yeah, I think maybe let's wait for people to log on. It's quite a big hack, and people need to listen to what is affected. And it seems that the cause of the problem was maybe patched, but that doesn't mean that the hack is finished, so to speak. So it could mean that the hack is not finished.
Would you agree with the title, biggest hack in crypto history, or too far?
I don't know. Let me explain to you what happened, and then I think that you know people can jump to their own conclusion. I think that because it was picked up so quickly, and I'm not sure who picked it up, but because it was picked up so quickly, we probably averted a hack that could have destroyed us for a long time, a long, 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 long time. Like it was. If this hadn't been picked up as quickly as it got picked up, I would say hundreds of thousands, if not millions of crypto users could have had their entire wallets drained. I think a lot of people, we don't know of a lot of people that did, and we don't know, I certainly don't know, but maybe some expert speakers will come up and tell us whether it's patched to the extent that it cannot be downloaded. Because from what I understand, so let's maybe just quickly go through what I understand. And again, please forgive me because I'm not, I'm technical to a point, but not to this level. But the ledger, anyone that uses a ledger wallet is probably the most common crypto hardware wallet out there. And it's supposed to be like the safest solution you can get because it's a hardware wallet. It's not a software wallet, which is effectively lives on your phone or lives on your computer. You actually have to plug it in every time that you want to use the wallet. The Ledger Connect source repository was attacked. And essentially what this means is that every time that you connected, anyone that connected their ledger and interacted with any Ethereum app or any app out there, effectively exposed their wallet to, if you approve the transaction, you effectively exposed your wallet to a draining function. And a draining function effectively gives the hacker the opportunity or the privilege or the rights to drain your wallet. Now, they don't have to drain your wallet immediately. It could live on the thing, and they can decide to drain your wallet whenever there is a money in your wallet. And so a lot of people who interacted anytime after 9:45 or 9:44 UTC this morning, a lot of people that interacted with DeFi apps, and there's a whole, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what the list is. The list is so long that it doesn't even fit onto tweets. It's so long. If anybody interacted with any of those apps, they were affected by this. Now, there's a lot of things that I don't know, and I don't know if anyone knows yet. It seems that it was inserted by an employee of Ledger. So seems an ex-employee uploaded a malicious version of the connector kit. This UI front-end library, which would run on the client side, it has since been removed. So Ledger, it did take quite a while to come out with some kind of public statement. I'll quickly read you the public statement. We have identified and removed a malicious version of the Ledger Connect kit. A genuine version is being pushed to replace the malicious file now. Do not interact with any dApps for the moment. We'll keep you informed as the situation evolves. Your Ledger devices and your Ledger were not compromised. So the devices aren't compromised, but if you're interacted with apps, you effectively, from what I understand, gave signing power. You almost like gave the attacker a proof of your signature, and then they could empty your wallet. That's my non-technical understanding of exactly what happened. It seems to have been patched, but what I don't know is if any users interacted during the 3 or 4 hours that this hack was actually underway, or that this malicious code did actually live in the Ledger Connect interface, then I don't know if those wallets can still be drained or not. And that's, I guess I'm hoping that people will be able to come on and tell us.
Quickly, I just spoke back channel with Seth from Ledger. And right now, we obviously invited them on the show so they could give the perspective. Their comms team is not allowing that at this exact moment, and they're all hands on deck resolving this. But he said that it is, his understanding is that it is resolved and that they'll be putting more out there about it. But we are trying to get them on. They're just not doing it at the second. Maybe Jameson, maybe after hearing Rand's rundown, obviously pretty much the foremost security expert.
I'm sure you can give a much better explanation.
Yes. Yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah, I can give you my perspective. And, you know, it is still, I guess you could say, a fog of war. We're still trying to get all of the details. And, you know, the Ledger team, I'm sure, is digging directly into exactly what the malicious code was doing, because there are open questions around exactly how it was being executed and how they were trying to trick users. So the short version of, like, why this is a potentially catastrophic type of attack is because what we really see is this single point of failure that is getting injected into basically every DeFi Web3 app out there. And that's just because of the prevalence of Ledger devices, and all of these apps want to allow people to use their Ledger devices with them. Now, one thing which we're not entirely sure of yet, I'm sure we'll figure this out eventually, I'm not sure that it's necessarily true that this would only affect Ledger users. I think we should be clear that Ledger was the entry point of this attack, which allowed them to get into hundreds, if not more, crypto apps. But just because that code came in through the Ledger library doesn't necessarily mean that only Ledger users would be affected. What we don't really know yet is exactly what prompts this malicious code was injecting into the apps to try to get people to sign a message that would effectively hand over control of your wallet funds. And, you know, drainer apps are not new. This has been going on for years. And it's kind of like a phishing attack in the sense that, you know, your funds are safe unless you approve, you know, some malicious smart contract to have access to them. And so what these malicious actors are trying to do is to trick you into approving that, making you think that you're approving something else. So we're seeing some people like Zach are tracing some funds that are being drained and sent, that it seems like this particular threat actor has likely been operating in the space for several months. They just found a new way to inject their malicious code into many different apps. And it's not necessarily over in the sense that while it's a very good thing that this code was caught and patched within 3 or 4 hours, but due to the nature of how code gets distributed across the internet, it's still possible that there are people out there who may still be loading this older malicious version of the code, because it's probably cached in many, many different places all over the internet.
I mean, it sounds like you can't interact with DeFi right now safely. I mean, are we talking about you shouldn't be, you know, connecting to Uniswap or other decentralized exchanges? Should we be using any of this right now until we get more clarity? I mean, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people here obviously utilize a Ledger with MetaMask for trading or investing because they have been told that it's the safer way than just leaving the tokens inside your MetaMask. And sounds like now you might have injected this malicious code all over the place.
True. You know, it's obviously safer to keep your private keys on an air-gapped device, but just due to the nature of how these more complex smart contract networks work, is that it's possible for you to, you know, hand over control of your funds without actually losing the key itself. So yeah, the safest thing to do right now is nothing. The experts are digging into it and will come out, I'm sure, with more specific advice and assurances once it's clear that it's unlikely for people to still be accidentally loading this code.
Mario, Rand, you guys are co-hosts. Obviously, I'm not. Rand, do we have a tweet or the list of compromised apps? I know how long it was, but I think it would be useful to pin that in the nest if we
have. So we don't have a list of compromised apps. You have a list of affected protocols. The list is very, very, very long. One place that you can access it, it's in Banter Bubbles. In under the newsroom, it's dropped under the newsroom as one
just
of the
link,
news articles.
Link,
it's
very can
long.
You guys
link,
tweet it? Yeah,
link
can you just tweet
it?
Yeah,
right.
Let me drop it, Mario. But, let me drop it to you and just tell me what do you think is the best way to drop something like
just
this?
Just post it. If it's a URL, just post it.
Just need a tweet.
Just check that out.
I'll check it out. Do you send it on WhatsApp, I guess, or Twitter?
Yeah, on WhatsApp. I'll check that out.
Okay, I'll check it. But just before I check it out, so James, let me ask a quick question to James. So, how long would something like this take to patch up if there's such a long list? And how does it compare to other similar attacks in terms of scale?
Well, it's kind of the double-sided nature of the beast is that the attack was so effective and able to get into so many apps because it was basically hot loading this client library without doing any integrity checks. So that means the fix is also similarly easy, and hopefully, you know, going forward, the Ledger library code is going to be more careful and is going to, you know, add in version pinning and integrity checks to make sure that it's not loading, you know, arbitrarily changed malicious code. This was an unfortunate oversight, but you know, this happens a lot in the JavaScript development ecosystem. There are a lot of potential supply chain attacks due to the complexity of all of the dependencies that JavaScript-based apps tend to be built on top of.
And do we know how much?
Really quick, Mario, MetaMask just tweeted, update, the recent hack affects all users, not just Ledger users. We've deployed a fix for MetaMask portfolio users on the latest version, v2.121.0. We'll be able to transact again and will be updated automatically. If you're not on this version, please refresh your site data. So this is saying that even just using MetaMask right now, you're affected, to my understanding.
Yeah, that basically confirms what I had just said, is that Ledger was the entry point, but it was not the only target. You know, that's just how they got the malicious code in. But it looks like the attacker was smart enough not to constrain it only to like Ledger device signing functionality.
So what does this mean? Does this mean that anybody who used MetaMask, anybody who used any of the affected applications, and you're talking about pretty much every single DeFi application, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly.
Does that mean that your wallet could still be drained, or do you need to be interacting?
It requires you to hand over control of your wallet, which means, you know, you have to cryptographically sign a message. So yes, interacting with your wallet is when things start to get dangerous. And the problem that really arises is that, you know, nobody is going to know exactly what code their wallet is running. So that's why it's best for everyone to sit tight and get an all clear from the security experts.
Don't use DeFi, or
don't even use MetaMask. Like, don't use a wallet. It's not even don't use DeFi. Like, you don't even want to send tokens from yourself to yourself. Correct.
You shouldn't touch
your MetaMask.
You should not touch your wallet today. I mean, I don't know how much more clearly to say it. Just step away from the wallet. Do not touch the wallet.
Touch a lot of grass. Do not touch your wallet. Get the hell out of here. This is pretty crazy though, because you know, this is my, you know, knee jerk reaction, but I'm not going to trust the minute that they say everything is all clear when they had no idea it was there and was this pervasive in the first place.
No one said, who said it's all clear? It's only Ledger, and they're referring to the.
No, but I'm saying we're going to, you know, everybody's saying like we're all saying, you know, step away, wait until we get clear messaging. Who believes any of it? Like clear messaging, they didn't know it was there.
Jamison, I need to ask you. So, you would need to approve the front end, right? You would need to approve the wallet. So, only once you've approved the wallet does this get access to allow the drain function, right?
Correct.
Okay, and if you did approve a wallet, and your wallet is not drained yet, where do you stand?
Yeah, if you had done a approval action, you know, in the past 6 hours or so, I would look in and go to revoke that as quickly as possible.
But the problem is that I heard that if you go to revoke that is interacting with what I heard is that the more people that went to revoke that, the more people were actually enabling, because apparently the revoke that function uses the interface or something like that.
Well, I mean, that's a good question of, you know, would it be possible that they were also extremely smart and somehow have compromised the standard revocation action? You know, this is, once again, why we need to wait and see. Hopefully not many people have made large-scale approvals today. You know, the window is so short that I think that it's going to be fairly minimized. And the real question is, how long does it take to get all of this malicious code purged from all across the internet?
And how will we know to trust them? That's my bigger question. So when you're talking about the revocation, you're talking about if you go in MetaMask and click to disconnect from anything that you're connected to, right? Like disconnecting from a Uniswap, something like that.
No. You have to revoke. Because remember, once you've given a dApp permission to access your wallet, you need to then revoke the access that you've given the dApp. And so right now, what you have to be careful of is when you go to revoke the access, you're using the same thing. You're signing a transaction with the same thing that is infected. So what they said is, don't go there. Like, don't go there.
And the idea literally is, do nothing. Literally do nothing. It's very
clear. I saw that tweet too when they said that you basically revoke is also like, it's dangerous because it's also infected by, it's not infected, but it's also connected just like MetaMask, just like everything else. So just the best course of action is to do nothing, not even revoke, not anything. Because when you go to revoke, you're also confirming, the confirmation, the permission, you're giving the permission. So like, don't even touch the revoke websites. I think there's two of them for the Ethereum. Like, don't touch them. Don't touch them at all. Don't do anything. Touch grass. I mean, it's winter, so I guess touch snow, but yeah.
Be very, very, very careful today.
Do we know how much has already been drained, James?
So
we
have Ross Jameson, sorry. I've been following some of it. I don't know if we're following all the wallets. So about 610,000 is what ZachXBT said. I've got a wallet in front of me that currently has $252,000 in it, which is a separate wallet. Which is also labeled by ZachXBT as the malicious wallet. I mean, maybe one of the ideas is to try and get ZachXBT up here. I'm actually going to ping him and see if he wants to join us.
Rand just tweeted the whole list for anyone that wants to see it. Rand, do you want to pin it at the top for all the dApps that were affected?
I'll do it.
I just saw in our newsroom only 500,000 so far. That aligns pretty close with what you said, Rand. How is it so little if this is so widespread?
My concern is that, you know, once you've put a drain function in, once you've put a drain function in, you don't have to drain immediately. Some drain functions work that you can sit there, you can leave them for hours and hours and hours, days and days and days. And one day when there's money in the wallet, you can decide to drain it whenever you want. So, I mean, we need to get, I don't have enough technical details, and I haven't yet found anyone that knows enough technical details to tell us exactly what this thing is. But I think we need to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, we did see revoke.cash has said that they've fixed their particular website,
okay, so
they
don't
have the bad code in it, but they're still recommending not touching anything, at least for the rest of the day. And, you know, I think one interesting aspect of all of this, which obviously I've been banging the drum on for many years, is that this is not going to affect people who are using multi-sig wallets, because you can't approve a dApp to a multi-sig wallet without having, you know, meeting that threshold of signatures. So a single signature approval is not going to compromise people.
So let's just quickly, because a lot of people don't understand what multi-sig, it's a very technical term. A lot of people that are listening here, they hear the word multi-sig, they immediately believe that they can't access a multi-sig, they don't know what it is. Maybe just like walk us through how a multi-sig works in day-to-day practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest way to explain it is to think of, you know, physical lock boxes or safety deposit boxes. You know, instead of just having one key that you have to insert into that box, you're going to need multiple keys that, you know, have to be turned at the same time, you know, almost like nuclear launch code type of approval. And, you know, this is what gives you a lot more robustness against all types of attacks, including these software supply chain attacks. Because even if you're keeping your keys offline on a device like Ledger, Trezor, or whatever, as we've seen, it's possible for you with a single click of a button to unknowingly approve a malicious action. But what these, you know, malicious scripters are not really doing is trying to attack people who have multi-sig setups. It's a lot more complex to do so, in part because it would require, you know, multiple supply chain attacks at the same time. People would have to go get multiple keys and sign them to approve that malicious action.
So let's just bring that back to practicality. So I'm a trader, and every day I'm trading meme shitcoins on Uniswap. That's what I do. The question that I'm asking is, what I need to now have two ledgers every time I want to sign a transaction? How do I get the second signature? That, I think that's the part that people don't understand.
Right. Well, it could be two ledgers, though I would recommend against that because, you know, using the same manufacturer means that both of those devices are potentially compromised by a single supply chain attack. So this is why, you know, at Casa, we recommend people use like a Ledger and a Trezor, or really any two different devices from different companies that use different code, different hardware, so on and so forth.
Jameson, Ran, really quickly to add to that. I've been a longtime Casa customer. That's how I use multisig for my Bitcoin. I've been pretty outspoken about that. But Ram, when you're talking about interacting with DeFi, the process of doing that with safe multisig is prohibitive, right? I mean, I don't even know how this would work, Jameson, if that's even a thing. But I would literally have to run around like to three states and yeah.
No, so I'll tell you what. I mean, I know what the answer is. I just wanted to hear from Jameson. But so, if you're really serious about security, the what you need to do is you need to separate your holdings from your tradings. And the idea would be to use a multisig to get money onto a wallet that is like a place where you want to be trading all day, and then use the wallet.
But any transaction from one to the other could be a victim of the exploit.
Yeah, but you probably wouldn't be a victim of the exploit if you used Ledger and Trezor as your two multisigs, because you know, you hope that the attack doesn't target both. You know the part that worries me here? The part that worries me here is this is picked up in a couple of hours. And if this had gone on for 24 or 48 hours and people would have carried on and this hacker was smart and, you know, he didn't action. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know if he is as smart as we think or not as smart or whatever. What we do know, though, is that if he had waited 24 hours to drain any wallets whilst infecting more and more and more DeFi users, and then he would have pressed the button at once and automatically drained all the wallets, you pretty much would have seen 50% of crypto wiped out.
Absolutely possible. And yeah, speaking to your point, I think that people should realize that you don't need to have just one wallet, you know, especially if you have a substantial portion of your net worth in crypto, then it makes sense to have different levels of security, because what you're always doing is you're making trade-offs between security and convenience. So, you know, it's good to have a super duper secure distributed cold storage setup, and then your trading setup is hopefully going to be a smaller portion of your stash that's easier for you to access, but of course also easier for you to lose.
Yeah, I mean,
Ran, let me ask you a question. Ran, I want to ask you a question. Mm. In light of this, and as many exploits as we've seen, and I'm not talking about your investment portfolio. I just said I'm a Casa multisig. Mm. I'm just putting this out there, not as a question for me, but because I know a lot of people are thinking this. For trading, would you right now feel more comfortable with your coins on a centralized exchange or dealing with all of this?
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to ask the same question. Like the whole concept of not your keys, not your coins is just getting questioned now.
Yeah, well, someone said there was a meme that was posted There was a meme that was posted. I'm trying to find the meme, but it says something like, your keys still not your crypto. You know, even though you got the keys, it's still not your crypto because you can get drained.
Yeah, hold on. The difference between this is that this is being remedied right now. And if it was on a centralized exchange, you couldn't do crap with your coins. So no. Your keys, not your coins. That's the way to go.
Is it remedied? We don't know. We hope the source is remedied, but we don't know if the implications are remedied yet. No one knows that yet. Why MetaMask are basically saying, step away from your computer today.
And Toby, you're saying with the sex, but Toby, with the sex, with the centralized exchange, wouldn't they remedy the situation as well? In some case, insure the money as well. Who's going to insure the money now?
By that time, they could have been completely hacked. I mean, you're talking about, this is a sophisticated attack. I mean, they believe it was an inside job. I don't know if this is the root of why people believe that it was an inside job, but they found a piece of code saying it was published, and they publish an email address in this code, which is, it's like literally published. It's on Twitter. It's jun.sugiura.jp@gmail.com. Because it looks like when the code was published, it was published by this person, and he left an email address. Now, is that true? Is it not true? Was it compromised? No one knows.
I haven't found that. So that's supposedly the ex Ledger employee. Yeah. And let's speak about two facts here. First of all, if he did that, do you really think he would leave his personal and business email there? So that's kind of, that's not going to happen.
Yes, I think you're right. But also people make mistakes.
I have another point. Someone else in the same tweet, in the subtweet, pointed out that people were targeting phishing via phishing emails 24 hours ago. So like yesterday, they were targeting GitHubs. So like specifically GitHubs. So my conclusion here with a little bit of cybersecurity history that I have is that the guy, the ex-employee, got phished. So he fell for the phishing attack and his GitHub got compromised, obviously. And In my opinion, I think the Ledger probably did not revoke his access as they like fired him or he was let go or whatever. And that is my thesis. I don't think that's the guy that actually like did the exploit. Like this is a sophisticated hack. This is a sophisticated exploit. So if this is a sophisticated actor, do you really think he would leave his public email into the, I just don't think it is. I think he got phished and he's an ex-employee and the Ledger did a mistake not revoking the access from his
sense.
It does make sense, as I said. It does.
Theory. Yeah, it theoretical. But
in theory, yeah, of course, it's not 100%, quickly. But common sense.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, Rand, quickly, just to go back to what you said once again, I want to be clear. I am not questioning the keys, coins, ethos for your investment stack. I'm asking if you are a trader who's aggressively trading a bunch of garbage that you don't care about that could be worth quite a bit of money. At this point, I'd be pretty 50-50 on using a MetaMask or a Ledger and interacting with Uniswap as I would by putting it on Coinbase where it's secure and needs a YubiKey to do anything. I would be pretty close there.
Scott, let me tell you what happened. I was at my son's birthday party when this all went down. And one of the things that I feel really, really guilty about is that I do work too hard. And because of crypto, I end up working 24 hours. I end up working weekends. I end up always looking at my phone. And the last thing that I wanted to do was be at my son's birthday party and be looking at my phone. But when the news hit, obviously we've been interacting with a lot of our wallets because that's what we do. We're in crypto, right? And there were no details about what actually was happening. And so I was at my son's birthday trying my hardest not to look at the phone, but living with the thought that maybe every single one of our wallets today is going to be drained. And we're talking about millions, okay? Like, I don't even want to, I don't want to put it out there, but a lot of money. Now, the first thought that went through my head is, fuck this crypto shit. I'm going back to traditional banking. I lost a lot of money in Luna. That nearly destroyed my life. And I just thought, if this is happening to me again, after I've just rebuilt and I've just started to rebuild, and this is happening to me again, then my first thought was, I hate crypto. Like, that's where I was. Like, for a few minutes at my son's birthday, I was at the point where I was like, I fucking hate this industry. If they have just drained every single one of the wallets that I've interacted with today, I hate this place.
What even if they have wealth,
what percentage of your wealth is in wallets versus centralized exchanges, if any?
Mario, no, you're
I
robotic.
Have any, I don't have anything in centralized exchanges. I mean, it's. I mean, we have custodians. Obviously, we use custodians for most of it. But still, it's substantial what's not with custodians and stuff that we're, you know, the problem is that when you're with a custodian, you can't trade, you can't DeFi, you can't stake, you can't unstake, you can't deploy strategies. You want to get your money out, it's a lot more complicated. So the majority of our money obviously is with custodians, but still a substantial amount is with traders. We've got a team of traders. They all have wallets. All the wallets are loaded with money, right? Right. I'll give you an example. We have a team of people that sit in our office and airdrop farm. That's all they do. So we give them each X amount of money. Let me give you an example. Like we could give you, if you're a sophisticated airdrop farmer, we would give you a wallet with $100,000 in it. And we would ask you to do and repeat multiple actions from wallets to try and get us airdrops. We have a team that does that, right? Now, to be honest, probably every single one of those wallets is actually compromised, because one of the airdrops we were farming is a ZK Sync one, and we know that ZK Sync was compromised. Okay, now I'm too scared to plug the wallets in to do anything with them. I'm sitting here thinking, well, you know, maybe those wallets are gone. Who knows? Like, who knows?
It can be very difficult to compare and contrast different security architectures and all the trade-offs between self-custody, third-party custody. Obviously, as you said, you get a lot more functionality in DeFi in self-custody. But I think the short version of how I try to sum up the entire security model available to us in this space is that everything that can go wrong in a self-custody setup can also go wrong in third-party custody. Because if you think about it, they are just doing self-custody, but for a lot of other people's money. So you're exposing yourself to a wider variety of threats when someone else has the money or someone else has the keys, because they can screw up in all of the possible ways that you could screw up.
Yeah, but most of the custodians,
which we just saw, we just saw that with Prime Trust and Fortress, who are two regulated trusted custodians in the United
States. Hold on. Most smart custodians today use what's called multi-party computation. What multi-party computation, I'm going to break it down quite simply, is in its most basic form, it shards your private key into three parts. And you need any two parts to sign a transaction. And usually only one of the three parts is held by the custodian. One is usually held by you. And the second one is held by some third party. And you need three signatures to access. You need two of the three signatures to access the wallet. And, you know, so most a lot of custodians are traditional custodians, which don't use that kind of technology. But I think these days, most of them are using MPC or multi-party computation.
I mean, Jameson, I assume that applies to literally everyone, what you're saying, correct? I mean, you know, even because we know that, like, you know, eventually BlackRock's going to be custodying their Bitcoin for the spot ETF, right? There's got to be somewhere that that at least large institutions or players are going to have to trust as custodians in theory.
Yeah, so the short version is, behind the scenes, any quote-unquote good custodian is going to have a robust internal architecture, you know, that splits up the sort of command and control of the actual keys internally. But from your perspective, that's a black box. You don't actually know what's going on. You can't confirm what's going on. And it's still possible for them to have vulnerabilities. The problem is you can't possibly know. So, you know, you are, of course, trusting that they know what they're doing. And there's a lot of good custodians out there that do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Just for the audience, and Ryan, maybe give a quick overview, because we've got a lot more people today because of the hack, obviously. Just another quick overview for anyone that missed it in the beginning, on because there's still people messaging me, and I was replying to a few of them saying, is this just about Ledger? And they don't know that there's a lot more dApps and MetaMask that also compromising. And I've also pinned the list of dApps that you tweeted. Everyone wants to see the full list is just pinned above. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of a potential massive, massive, massive DeFi hack. We don't know a lot. What we do know is that the entry point to this attack was malicious software inputted into what they call the Ledger Connector app or the Ledger Connector. I'm not sure what
the Connect Kit.
And essentially anyone that's interacted and signed transactions with this malicious, without knowing, with this malicious kit can have their wallet drained, or some people have already had their wallets drained. So the things that we don't know for sure is whether the hacker can still drain wallets that interacted earlier. We don't know that. We don't know. We think we know some of the apps that are affected. MetaMask has come out, and MetaMask has basically said, I don't know, Scott, if you want to read that tweet, but they pretty much said it's not only Ledger users that are affected. Ledger was the entry point, but now a whole lot of other dApps are pretty much affected. And the best advice that we can give anyone today is step away from the computer and don't touch DeFi until experts tell us that this is completely, completely safe. But for now, best advice I can give you, stay away from anything to do with DeFi today. And when we say DeFi, we're talking about anything where you approve a transaction on your wallet, whether it's a hot wallet or a cold wallet. So anytime that it says, would you like to approve this transaction? Would you like to connect your wallet? Don't do it today. Forget about it. Step away.
I think that's 100% perfect summary. I just, to a degree, and this is nothing against any of these specific parties or whatever, like, how do we trust that they cleaned it up when they tell us they did? I'm sorry. I don't want to touch any of it for a month. It's completely pointless. You could not pay me to trade right now, even if I saw a huge opportunity.
Picture it as a field full of landmines, and they assured you that they've cleared all the landmines. My feeling is, don't run into the field in the beginning.
It's exactly right.
Let others run in, let them blow up. Since we're giving the recap, Jameson, could you also just repeat what could happen next? Or what's the best case scenario? It's all been patched. Not many dApps were compromised. And what's the other alternative that got ran to say that could become the biggest hack in crypto history?
Right. So, the good news, this was caught very quickly. Why was it caught? Well, at least partially because, the code is open. Like, we can see what the code is. So, I think once the security experts have said they have fully audited and reviewed the latest version of the code, it's generally going to be good to go. I would imagine that will, happen sometime today. It's also interesting and almost ironic that we've created this incredibly decentralized, like, large ecosystem, and yet it still has these incredibly concentrated single points of failure. If you think about it, what seems to have happened here? One account of one former employee of one company got compromised, it appears, and that led to a vulnerability that affected hundreds of different apps used by who knows how many millions of different people. It's an amazing level of fragility and an otherwise robust ecosystem. So the openness of the ecosystem was one of the saving graces here that allowed this malicious code to be detected quickly, patched quickly, and now we're just sort of in the wait and see mode of making sure that any places where that code might have gotten cached and still could be getting served to people needs to get purged, and in order for people to be able to go forward and be able to use these apps with some peace of mind.
I think one of the reasons, one of the things that people forget is that we're still in the Wild West phase of this space, so things like this are going to happen. We're only 14 years into this. And just as Jameson said, it's open source, so we can actually see what's going on. This is unlike any time in history that we can actually do that. So it got caught. Code is fixable. And, all this doom and gloom, yes, there's going to be some collateral damage, but the space is going to be even stronger after this.
Do we know who spotted the hack initially? Anyone? We still don't know.
I haven't seen.
And how?
The first thing that I saw, and again, I don't know if it was the first one, I saw some communication coming out from SushiSwap. They came out with some communication. Bear in mind that they believe that the first wallet was drained at about 9:44 UTC. That was when they believe that the first wallet was drained. And again, please don't quote me on any of this. I'm only going on the information that I have, so I don't know if it was the real first or whatever else. That was the first time that we
heard that was something. that was 6 hours ago. And when did Ledger say it was patched?
I think about 4 hours later or something. So I think it was about 4 hours later.
And we would expect more waters to be drained, most likely. Just the question is how many more? Because it hasn't.
We don't know.
Mario, you're a robotic.
Yeah, we don't know. That's the problem. So Ledger came out at 2 hours ago. So they came out at 3:31. They came out 2.5 hours ago. And they said, we've identified and removed malicious version of the Ledger Connect kit. That was at 3:31. Underneath, they said malicious version of the file was replaced at 2:35 CET. The sushi swap communication. I'm just trying to find out when did that actually come out.
I like whenever, so hopefully I'm not roboting again, Scott, but I like whenever there's bad news in crypto, Danish requests to speak. Whenever there's good news, he's not even in the audio, so maybe peeks in and out. Yes, Danish.
Yeah.
What is it, Danish? Please.
Well, this is the future of money, guys. This is the future. I keep hearing this is the future, but apparently the future can be hacked.
There's not much we could say back. Not what was it? Not your keys, not your coins. Right, but then how?
Have fun staying poor, Danish. Have fun staying poor, buddy.
Is that Danish Schiff?
Well, I was gonna say today I made a proclamation on the morning show, which for Scott is super scary, which is. I am officially, it is the top. And the reason why it is.
Where was I?
You bought Bitcoin.
I'm buying Bitcoin today. I'm just letting people.
Who do you think convinced him? Who do you think convinced him that it was an uncorrelated asset?
Wait. Guys, sell everything. It's time.
I don't think so. Maybe. Yeah, but I convinced Donish that even if he, well, I don't know if I convinced him, but we had the conversation that I said, even if you literally hate it, it's idiosyncratic and uncorrelated. And so you should have it in your portfolio.
So Scott,
I'm going with the really soft sell.
Yeah. Scott got it started. And then Powell yesterday convinced me that the whole game is now rigged. I literally cannot believe how incredibly incompetent our Fed is now.
Why only yesterday? What happened yesterday?
What happened yesterday was the final straw that broke the camel's back. We literally saw in the last, well, pretty much the last week, the CPI numbers were doctored. They literally changed the numbers to fit a narrative. I've posted about that. I can put it up in the nest. Specifically, they said that health insurance premiums in these United States went down by 30%. That is obviously they talked about how there was a change in methodology. If you corrected that to the actual numbers, we actually saw that part of the basket go up by 0.2%. So it only represents 0.53% of the total weighting, but just that alone would have made us have a CPI that was higher than expected. If that would have occurred, there's no way they would be talking about rate cuts. They're saying yesterday on the dot plots, that we're expecting three, not one, not two, but three rate cuts next year. On what premise? GDP is at 5.2%. Unemployment data came in today. Jobless claims are hot. We're actually running at a hot economy. So what are they seeing? They're telling them that we should get three rate cuts next year? Okay, one rate cut at the end of the year, we can talk about it.
One of them said six. One of the Fed officials voted for six.
It's a fucking Ponzi. This is made up. I'm sitting here.
CPI is.
Oh my God. He's one of us. One of us. One of us. One of us.
I mean, yeah, you don't like CPI. We just changed the rules for how we calculate it. And they've been doing that for, what, several decades now? It just gets to be a bigger and bigger joke until you see, what was it, Krugman a few months ago posting something about like, we've defeated inflation. All you have to do is not include food, housing, electricity, energy, transportation, and inflation's really low.
But this is like one of those where it's, you know, obviously they're doing things differently, but this specific one is such an egregious change that it even got me sitting here. And I've been one of those people saying, look, you don't want to fight the Fed. The Fed is going to tell you what they're going to do, then they're going to do it. Yesterday was the correlate, the opposite correlate to what Powell did with the Jackson Hole speech. Yesterday was the opposite of that. He came in, you could tell he wasn't sweating as much. He wasn't touching his face as much. He seemed very confident. You could tell that he essentially called victory in his own special way. And it's incredibly dangerous. So the reason why I would be going into any sort of thing, and I am buying gold also, is because I'm sitting here asking myself, if this looks exactly like 76, 77, which, by the way, if you go back and read what people were saying at that time, in 76, 77, it was the same thing. Powell is no Volcker. He does not have the spine or the cojones. He is clearly
capitulating. Or 25% debt, or 25% debt to GDP.
Exactly. And so, like, we're literally sitting here in a day where the market is ripping, people are celebrating, and what we should be doing is calling for his head. This is incredibly dangerous, what he's doing. Just want to be very clear.
Adonis, I just am shocked. Okay, I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
Unless he's seeing deflation expanding from China to the rest of the world, which is what I think is happening, that could be the only reason why they're getting ahead of this, because this is incredibly irresponsible. Like, I'm putting the red flag up. This is nearly as irresponsible as calling inflation transitory. This is incredibly dangerous, in my opinion.
That's what he does. I just need to just briefly say, so I made a false assumption because I've been missing the finance spaces in the morning, unfortunately, because driving kids to school. But I made the assumption that you were doing it simply as an investment, and you just literally gave the Bitcoin pitch. In a billion years, I would have never thought that that was the reason that you bought it. I know you're laughing, but I'm actually quite impressed. We talked, literally, didn't we just talk about yesterday? Was it Mario? We were talking about strong opinions loosely held. And when intelligent people who can even be like,
yeah, but
very
this is
strong in one direction are presented with new information, they change their mind.
Danish contradicts it because that is, usually correlates with intelligence. But yeah, Danish did demonstrate exactly that. When I was really enjoying the pitch that he gave
us. Incredibly
Danish.
Impressed.
So I'll be clipping
impressed.
Danish. I'll be Danish, clipping this and streaming it in the finance space.
Are you going for
it's
Mario?
Buying CryptoPunk tomorrow. It's buying CryptoPunk.
No, imagine.
If Danish, if you want a promotion from the finance space to the crypto space, please send me your CV. I'll take a look at it and we'll let you know if we would consider you.
Dave.
Yeah, Dave. And also got Wahid. So Wahid also hasn't jumped in for months. Wahid, just before Dave jumps in. Wahid, I think you got triggered by Danish's comments. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I guess, you know, there's something that was very, very different, but it actually started this week, early this week. For the first time, Biden actually gave advice to the Fed. He was caught literally saying, you know what, they ought to start lowering rates. He had never done that. In fact, he actually was bragging that unlike Donald Trump, he was leaving the Fed alone, etc. So he kind of broadcast it and then
Election.
That's what I'm going to get. Election. And then Janet Yellen, literally 2 days ago, okay, the day before the Fed, she literally spoke like a Fed chair. I mean, it was insane, giving statistics, inflation, and Xing this and Xing that out, and then we ought to do this and all that. And then he basically comes and layers it in. So, you know, basically, the idea that he wants to front load the cuts so that he doesn't have to cut June, July, August, September, October, just right in front of the election, front load everything, June probably included in the cuts. I think that's very valid. He was extremely political. And yeah, I mean, if anyone here.
Well, this is extortion. They're extorting and they're extracting from the American people.
No, I get that. They're extorting and extracting on all levels. Like, it's becoming a banana republic. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Every day.
It's becoming one. I think it is, right?
I mean, every day we tune in, it's like, Jesus Christ. I mean, I don't know if you guys have, I've been busy with Mario behind the scenes on all the other shows, right? The political ones, the ones on Sunday. I mean, it literally, you know, for people who sort of grew up in the establishment, you know, I was on Wall Street, et cetera. I drank Kool-Aid like no tomorrow. I used to make fun of conspiracy theorists. And then in the last year, it's like you start to hear these stories and you just pinch yourself saying, you know, you got to hope that actually a lot of this is overblown, et cetera. Now it's just blatant. It is so, it's surreal, okay? Just look what they're doing to Elon Musk. Look what the FCC whistleblower this morning attested to. Like, yes, absolutely. The FCC was ordered to open up as many investigations on Elon Musk as possible. It's like there's no longer even hiding it anymore, right? The stuff that we uncovered yesterday with IBM, unreal. It's like no longer. So sorry, I'm deviating from the Fed. But yesterday is just like yet another data point that now it's blatant, right? And it's no longer, it's just blatant.
I mean, it's been blatant for a long time. It was the reason why I left the United States.
Yeah, but fools like me
believe something special is happening.
Sorry, Ryan, you can't, I always get annoyed when Ryan says this. You can't go to South Africa and say, yes, well, I left the US. Exactly. It's still far ahead most other countries in the world, but it is flawed.
And also, there's something very special happening, Ryan, which is hard to explain. I have to say, I know people have been talking shit about the Fed and all that, and it's a fiat. The fiat system, Ponzi crypto, whatever you guys talk about, that's fine. But this is a little bit different because they're actually doctoring the underlying data that they're then using to rationalize decision making.
What's new about
that? That is new. They did not change methodologies, man. That's not a thing that they did. This is new. I'm telling you. And to do this right before an election year at a time where I'll give you a really simple example. It's a question I asked. At 5.2% GDP with unemployment being near all-time lows, today's jobs data came in hotter than expected, and American retail sales are higher than expected. And we're talking about 3 cuts next year? What? How? We don't.
I mean, to be fair, the dot plot's never been right in history. But even to hear the narrative is, yes, it's astounding.
Would you say the Fed pivoted yesterday?
They pivoted yesterday, beyond reasonable doubt. I mean, it was unreal.
Yesterday
was the bizarro Jackson Hole speech. It was the complete opposite this time. He literally said the words, you know, we might be at risk for recession.
Danish, listen, I was having a bad day today, bro. I woke up this morning. You know, we had the hack. The hack, you know, we still don't know who's affected. I was a bit disillusioned by crypto again. I thought to myself, what the hell am I doing in this industry? But I can tell you that watching you turn like this, bro, I mean,
this is not a good turn,
right? We are so
making me sad. I'm
sad
about this. This is sad about the American future.
Yeah, we've been sad. We've been sad, Danish.
We turned like this.
We're very sad when crypto pumps, Danish, as well. We share your sadness, and it is very.
I hope Donish literally like buys a Lambo and retires on an island because of his involvement in this. Truly, because of his
crypto punk.
And Donish, I mean, you know, I do think, in case you think I wasn't being a genuine, we are looking for another co-host on Crypto Town Hall because you know Mario is so busy with politics that we want to replace him. So we're thinking of replacing him. So I really think you should apply. We'll get you into shitcoins. Next thing, you'll be buying bombs.
We have the D-Gen show, the other one that we do. We get Danish on that one with all the shitcoins.
In all seriousness, though, that when you, you know, this is really fun and it has been the last few days, but in all seriousness, when you listen to this, the entirety of this conversation, doesn't it just make you a little bit more of a Bitcoin maximalist than maybe you were before? That you should just buy Bitcoin, throw it in the entire and get the hell out of all of this.
Well, we're just, Scott, We just talked about the hack as well. So just take it easy. It's a good day and a bad day.
Yeah, I'm just saying that because of the hack and because of the Fed and all of the main topics we're talking about, all roads lead directly to Bitcoin and nowhere else. The rest of it is, I mean, have fun and figure it out. But I love to speculate, but the rest of it's a trade.
To be completely clear about something, because I'm getting a bunch of DMs on the back end, there was a question that was asked from one of our listeners. Do I believe that the ETF will be approved? The answer is no, but I still think that we're doing such a bad job as a government that I have to put my money somewhere else.
Wait, hold on. You don't believe the ETF is going
to
be approved?
Not by January 15th. Sorry, to be clear. I don't expect it to be approved by January 15th. I expect it to be approved in 2025. I am not convinced that in an election year...
Because of Gensler. Yeah.
Because in an election year, look at what Biden is doing. Look at what these guys are doing. You don't think they can push off an ETF approval until after the election? Of course they can.
They can do whatever they want.
That depends on how much support they want from Larry Fink.
The cash create narrative changes that in a big way. That is a massive, massive pipeline to TradFi. So the cash create versus in-kind is a massive, massive difference in the Bitcoin ETF narrative. It's the reason why I think it will be approved in January. And we should probably change the whole fight the Fed conversation, change it to, you know, don't fight Larry, right? So the Fed basically works for Larry. Just follow what Larry's doing. What's Larry been doing? Larry's been grabbing a big bag of Bitcoin and a small bag of Ether. So this entire conversation about Banana Republic and who's doing what's Larry doing, right? So cash create, again, is a massive, massive, massive pipe to TradFi. And that hasn't gotten enough conversation over the last 2 days. But the last, 6 to 12 meetings that has happened between the ETF companies and the SEC has basically been conversations about in-kind versus cash create. And the SEC has drawn a fairly, fairly hard line in the sand about cash create. So that's what it's going to be.
Just explain the difference for people who don't understand the difference.
So cash create essentially makes the Bitcoin ETFs, the spot Bitcoin ETFs, much like a mutual fund. So a mutual fund, you put your money in there, it stays in there, but you're going to get a tax bill every year based on what happens inside of the mutual fund. It's the reason why ETFs gobbled up enormous market share from mutual funds, because ETFs effectively are in-kind mechanisms where whatever happens inside of the ETF, you're not getting hit with a tax bill on an annualized basis. You're effectively tax protected. That's the difference between in-kind and cash create. Cash create creates a taxable event. I put out a tweet maybe an hour ago. Cash create is a massive kick to the balls for Grayscale. Well, why? Grayscale's Bitcoin, cost basis is really, really, really low versus Larry Fink's Bitcoin product. Everybody else's Bitcoin product, right, which has been created and beginning to fill the coffers over the last 6 to 12, maybe even 18 months. Grayscale's Bitcoin product has been around for a long time. So cash create with redemptions of any kind or movement of any kind inside of the ETF is going to create a taxable event. Well, that taxable event makes it, it's another liquidity issue associated with TradFi. It also means that other entities, other traditional finance entities that exist will be easier access, easier to get it approved inside of their mechanisms and boards and all that stuff. But it creates a real problem, for example, for a place like Grayscale. But point being is, what's Larry doing? Larry knows what's coming. Larry is, he agrees with, I don't want to say his name wrong, but Donish here. He agrees that he knows what's going on. He knows what's happening. He sees it. He hears it. He hears it before anybody else does, right? So he's loading up. Cash create is a big deal. Everybody needs to take a real look at it, have an understanding of what's going on, have an understanding that is everybody argued, all the Bitcoin, spot Bitcoin ETF applicants argued against cash create and lost. So their bet is we're going to bend the knee on Cash Create. We're going to launch these products, hopefully grab a ton of assets under management, and, you know, deal with the consequences of Cash Create. But Cash Create is going to happen. And it's, to me, it's one of the reasons why it's going to get approved in January.
Danish, are you convinced?
Dave Weiss, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff to unpack there. The tax implications, I'm not an expert on, but it really has a lot to do with, you know, where you buy it, where you sell it, how much of the of it is churning flow versus, you know, lots of creates followed by redeems later. But the big difference in Cash Create means that the funds are now going to have to, part of their marketing is how much slippage they're going to have in performance because of how badly they trade. So funds that have the ability and have scale to trade using modern tools, now I don't want to show my own company, so I'll just leave it at that, will have better performance than ones that just trade in other ways and use their custodians to trade before them. So trading all of a sudden, where if it was not Cash Create, then you could use the best market makers, the best ways to actually acquire your Bitcoin, however you did it, the miners, whatever, but you won't be able to do that except for seeding. And so it means that when you want to create, you're going to be publishing a price all day long. And if you can't buy Bitcoin at that price, your fund performance will be lower. And if you buy it at a better price, your fund performance will be better. And so it puts trading into the equation, which some people, you know, have vested interest in that being good or bad. So that is important. It is why, by the way, they didn't want that, because funds didn't want to have to worry about that. They wanted to be able to outsource that, and now they can't. So that matters. But I want to go back to the Fed, because Scott knows this. For about a year and a half, almost every Monday, I have said that in 2024, the Fed is going to go dovish. There is no effing way they were going to be tightening or not have stopped going into an election cycle. I'll have to admit, even I was surprised at how absurd yesterday's speech was. And of course, the FX markets, which are generally not terribly volatile, has anyone looked at the euro, the pound, the yen? I mean, you're talking 1% moves, boom, you know, in 24 hours. Those are big moves. The whole world is basically saying, wait a minute, what the hell's going on in the U.S.? And that is the Bitcoin narrative. Actually, Bitcoin.
Dave, Treasury's less than 4%. 10-year less than 4%.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, what is going on?
I understand. Yeah, exactly. I don't. That was going to be the next thing I was going to say. Thank you. It was going to be, how the hell did we go? We've lost. Just think about it. The Treasury yield, what has it been, a month since when it tapped 5%? Those are just extraordinary moves. I mean, people talk about Bitcoin's not investable because it's volatile. When the 10-year bond yield moves by, you know, 20% of its yield, I mean, 5% to 4% in about a month, that is a big move. And so the use case for Bitcoin, I'm not surprised Dr. Donish and other smart people aren't saying, okay, wait a minute, this really needs to be part of your portfolio. I mean, we could talk about this at length and will, but it is kind of a big deal.
Just to be clear, you're not categorizing Donish as one of the smart people. I just want to make sure that we all align.
And then someone else, I noticed this, Ryan, Someone apparently asked Danish about his source about the ETF. Either Danish is making shit up or Danish is part of the crypto crew now.
But I do want to echo one thing. I think it was Andrew was saying. But the fact is, you have to understand, the SEC does not get into the weeds on the mechanisms of how an ETF and that stuff is going to work without approving it. That virtually Correct. Never happens. Correct. So the fact that Correct. They have done this, what you have to understand is, the ball is at the 1 yard line, and we're talking maybe the 1 inch line, and we have the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ryan, you've got a hot mic again, man. Yeah, go ahead, David.
I was just going to say that the fact that BlackRock and others have all amended their filings to go to cash, you know, to cash, you know, in kind cash versus in kind create. And by the way, obviously redeem too. You don't have, it doesn't have to go that way. There will be two prices, the redeem price and the cash price, but a create price. But, you know, maybe later in the later spaces, we could talk about ETFs, you know, so people could understand why.
Dave, sorry, I need to interrupt because Ledger just tweeted a full update on this. And I know that people are waiting for this. So we'll go right back. It's their final timeline and update to customers. You can find this at Ledger. Ledger ConnectKit Genuine version 1.1.8 is being propagated now automatically. We recommend waiting 24 hours until using the Ledger ConnectKit again. The investigation continues. Here's the timeline of what we know. By the way, Smiley, you were correct. This morning, CET, a former Ledger employee, fell victim to a phishing attack that gained access to their NPMJS account. The attacker published a malicious version of the Ledger ConnectKit, affecting versions 1.1.5, 6, and 7. The malicious code used a rogue Wallet Connect project to reroute funds to a hacker wallet. Ledger's technology and security teams were alerted, and a fix was deployed within 40 minutes of Ledger becoming aware. The malicious file was live for around 5 hours. However, we believe the window where funds were drained was limited to a period of less than 2 hours. Ledger coordinated with Wallet Connect, who quickly disabled the rogue project. The genuine and verified Ledger ConnectKit version 1.18 is now propagating and is safe to use. For builders who are developing and interacting with the Ledger ConnectKit code, ConnectKit development team on the NPM project are now read-only and can't directly push the NPM package for safety reasons. We have internally rotated the secrets to publish on Ledger's GitHub. It goes much deeper, but it says that Chainalysis, thank you to Wallet Connect, Tether.io, Chainalysis, Zach, XBT, and the whole community that helped us and continue to help us identify and solve this attack. It seems that the Tether is frozen. Ledger, along with Wallet Connect and our partners, have reported the bad actor's wallet address. The address is now visible on Chainalysis. Tether has frozen the bad actor's USDT. That's good news. Remind you to always clear sign with your Ledger. You guys can read it. That's the gist of it, but it seems they fixed it within 40 minutes. It was live for a couple hours, and maybe they got the worst of it here, but man, so this could be crisis, really, really crisis, of,
crisis averted. And
I asked Jameson. Assets, I don't know, Jameson. What do you think?
Melt up continues. Is that what you're saying?
I think for price, yes, but
this is pretty much what I think we were speculating was the likely cause. But I'll say this is a fairly amateur mistake on Ledger's end, and by that I mean, this is a standard, software as a service, a security architecture issue that you should have what we call two-man rules around the review and deployment of all code. And so whatever architecture Ledger had internally around deploying those NPM packages, it allowed a single employee to write and deploy code. And like, that's a single point of failure. That's really what I harped on an hour or so ago, is the fact that despite how distributed and decentralized this system is, we still have these insane single points of failure. So it sounds like, Ledger has figured out that they need to make the deploy process more robust there. And going forward, it seems unlikely that this specific type of attack will happen again. But this is the nature of security, is that bad things happen, you learn lessons from them, and you harden your security processes as a result.
And did they say, by the way, Scott, did they say it's a former employee? Does that mean they fired him after this incident?
I don't know if the implication is that they got fired for this, or that they were already a former employee already who got exploited.
Already a former employee, and that would just indicate another ball that they dropped. Where it's a standard security practice that you revoke all former employees, authentication mechanisms as soon as they are terminated.
Is this the second or third Ledger issue in the last 18 to 24 months? I remember the last one.
Third. Had the, I don't know if it was 18 months, but they obviously had the data breach that had nothing to do with any of this. And then they had the controversy over their new program, for recovering keys. And that sort of showed that maybe someone else, I don't remember the exact details, but yes, they've been in a controversial situation about three times at least.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, shouldn't you kind of bring folks like Jameson in and have a couple conversations about how to avoid stuff
like
this?
He has his own company.
I know, but yes. Still, I mean, point being,
Jameson, you need a job.
People like it. It's this should feels fairly elementary to avoid stuff like this. But who am I to say?
I guess what you guys can do is, if you're worried about this stuff, then, have multiple different hardware wallets that you put your coins on. at least you're, you know, as anti-fragile as you can be.
Yeah.
Understand this update. Am I robotic? No. So with this update, so you guys said the worst has been averted. So does that mean because they spotted it too early, there's not going to be that many dApps affected? There's not going to be that many wallets affected?
But this is Ledger, right? This is coming from Ledger and talking about I wouldn't start jumping into anything else that could have, like, obviously.
No, but if Ledger patched it. But Ledger was the entry point. If the entry point was closed up that quickly, does this mean that not that many wallets would have been affected? I'm sure there's a bunch of them.
I mean, but it just, MetaMask also deleted their tweet, the one that said that it doesn't matter whether you use Ledger or not. That tweet also
deleted. Yeah. That's important.
They deleted it?
Yeah.
That's very important. Yeah. I like how you mentions it casually. But so what would you make of this, Jameson?
I think it's showing that it's fairly minimized. You know, we'll know over the next day or two, like you said, the drainer doesn't necessarily need to take all the funds, though I would suspect at this point, since they've been found out, that they're going to be draining as quickly as possible and that they have likely already drained everything that they could drain. Sounds like Tether has frozen the funds, but apparently the USDC funds that they had drained were not frozen in time, and they already converted that to something else. So I think at this point, it's probably mostly going to be on the Chainalysis folks to try to follow their movements.
And this is a perfect example of the advantages and disadvantages of centralization. So with obviously the hack itself, it shows a disadvantage. But then with Tether being able to freeze some of the funds that were drained, just shows an advantage, David.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're going to get away with nothing. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, how much did they get away with their... with USDC?
Well, it was only a few hundred. It was only a few hundred thousand, but I'm assuming that is being watched very closely now. I don't know what it was for USDC. Jameson was the one who quoted that. I didn't see that in the Ledger part.
David?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to bring the conversation back to macro. Powell, Bitcoin ETF approval. I'm sorry that Danish is no longer here, but... you know, I really believe with the ETF approval forthcoming in January, I think 2024 could be the year of Bitcoin in ways, in terms of its not only adoption, but just profile being grown massively. And on that point, I'm wondering how much prominence El Salvador and the experiment in Argentina going on under Milei right now could possibly get, and contrast that with what's going on here in the United States, right? So we've got, I think, you know, general consensus on this call that, you know, the Fed is not doing the prudent thing in terms of, if it does, in fact, go ahead and cut rates next year. We are not being, managed. The U.S. economy is not being managed properly. You have Milei in Argentina who, you know, whether he'll get to dollarization and whether he'll get to Bitcoin being legal tender, you know, very quickly, we'll have to wait and see. But clearly, based on his acts on the first day of his presidency, you know, is really serving it up straight as a real libertarian. And, you know, he is going to go ahead and he's going to radically change the society there in terms of being fully transparent and having very little, having the smallest government, frankly, footprint out of any government that's out there. And then El Salvador, you know, clearly in the black on its investment in Bitcoin and only going bigger on that investment. Those two countries are not particularly notable in the worldwide scheme of things, but in terms of the experiments that they're undergoing, I think they're really
good. David, let me jump in, David. I want to bring the conversation back to the hack. Scott, you told me that the Yeah, is he okay with us mentioning his name? Did he give you an okay?
Yeah, the CTO of SuperKeySwap DM'd me, Matthew Lilly, and he said, hey, I'm listening to the spaces, and I'm the one who broke the news, so we'd like to get him up on stage, of course. And we did mention, obviously, without his name, that it was from SushiSwap, the CTO, that we'd heard it. So if he can either request, or we're adding him.
Yeah, I just saw a message as well. He sent it to me 16 minutes ago. I apologize, Matthew, for missing it. I've just sent you an invite. Request to speak as well if you're listening. Let me best reply. Oh, there he is. Is that him? No, that's not him. Let me just reply to him quickly. Request. All right, we'll get him up. Be good to get his thoughts on this. And if you are the one that broke it, Matthew, I'm assuming you did, considering you're saying you did. Congratulations. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, I agree. I've just sent you an invite, man. You can actually see you in the audience if you want to come up and speak. Scott, did you ask him? Okay, he said, yeah, he brought it, came up. Hold on, did he come up or leave?
Yeah.
He's on stage. Oh, no, he didn't accept. No.
We'll
be good to bring him up, Matthew, get your quick thoughts on this. But otherwise, appreciate you spotting the vulnerability. So credits to you. But I think that's pretty much it, Scott. I think we've covered the story well.
Yeah, if he's not coming up, I feel like we have to end it at seemingly things are improving. I think we got good insight there, but we should have literally just crashed the rug, the spaces, the minute that Donish said that he bought Bitcoin. Should have just ended it.
Yeah.
Because that was such a revelation that we could only go down from there.
Yeah, I'm just checking the news if there's anything else. By the way, are we doing spaces on New Year's Day and Christmas Day, or just taking those days off?
I don't know. How much trouble do you want us to be in with our family and children and wives that you don't
have? Yeah, I don't want my wife and kids to miss me on those days. You're right. Anyway, I think we've covered it well.
Yeah, I think we did. All right. Well, thank you, Matthew. If you didn't get up, appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, everyone, give him a follow. It's at Matthew double T, Matthew Lilly, LILLEY. So give him a follow and a thank you. Cool. Thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Bye.
Oh, Danish is back. Why are you coming back, Danish? Hold on, they're going to end it, I think. Let's see where Danish is back if they don't end it. Don't end it yet. Ah, oh, he left, he left. Ah, oh, you can end it. Now, so you can end the space.